Well, it's been nearly a year since the world didn't end again. And today I have not one, but two doomsday prophecies for you.
How many times can the world end?
Well, evidently thousands.
Okay.
Awesome.
This time we have two competing hypotheses, which are actually eminently testable, because we will learn by the end of today. First one being from Ron Weiland, who is a biblical prophecy scholar.
Right.
Not really a field that I think has a lot of respect.
Right, right.
Because they don't really have a lot of... They don't produce a lot.
Sure, sure.
He says the world's going to end today.
Today? Like now? Like, is the world going to end now? Well, before I say, this is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480.
Well, as long as we remain on the air... We're still good. But if we go off the air suddenly, you can just assume that the rapture is starting.
Mine is the last voice you will hear.
Cool. I always wanted to be on the air during the apocalypse.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah.
I mean, it's every girl's dream. Let me look out the window here. Nope,
still a world.
Still here.
Yeah.
Okay.
How are you, Deanna?
I am doing fabulously today. It's been an amazingly wonderful weekend.
Oh, cool.
And by the way, in the opposing corner...
Oh, right, the other story. There's two worlds ending today.
Two worlds ending. Well, the one world ending twice.
Oh, okay.
I guess it bounces.
Yeah.
The second one comes from Mark Farrell. He's doing a series of biblical prophecy revelation-style lectures in San Francisco this week.
All right.
The last of which is today, at which he will announce when the world will end.
Oh, so maybe the world might end, but the world might end before we find out when the world ends?
It may. I think that, as these things always seem to happen, I think these guys are really on rapture fever because they want to outrace those pagan Mayans.
Oh, sure, yeah. Because it's, well, that's what I thought Harold Camping was about, was that, you know, I was like, oh, it's going to be in 2011, so haha, no 2012 for you.
Yeah, these guys are a little jealous because the Mayans got a Roland Emmerich film, and these guys get a series of billboards, and there just seems to be diminishing returns on the sort of attention that they've been getting.
And Kirk Cameron movies.
And Kirk Cameron, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't compare.
And is Kirk Cameron talking about the end of the world now, too?
Mayans, not Mayans, right? I want to make sure I have that right. Mayans.
Mayans.
Mayans, right. No, I don't think I've heard anything from Kirk Cameron recently, which is how I like my Kirk Cameron, silent and far away from me. 253-584-1480.
I'm sorry, I just can't resist the fart jokes.
Oh, yeah, well,
I'm just completely juvenile here.
Eh, it's a good day for him. I don't know. Nice and sunny out.
Absolutely.
Windows closed.
What a wonderful day.
Peggy's Challenge?
Yes, Peggy's Challenge.
Peggy's Challenge. Those of you who haven't listened to Ask an Atheist recently or haven't listened to Ask Atheist before might not have heard about Peggy's Challenge. Peggy from Kent called us, yay, about 3 months ago now. It's some time ago. Asking the listeners to chip in and help keep Ask an Atheist on the air. And our listeners have really stepped up to the plate. And this week we have...
Yes, Eric from Sanford, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Bob from Sarnia, Ontario, Canada.
Wow.
Frank from San Diego, California.
Mm-hmm.
Lars from Stratford, Connecticut. And finally, Louise from Denmark, who actually sent her donation along with an email saying that she was the only contributor we had last week.
Right.
And she emailed us to let us know she's going to be donating every week for the next month.
Oh, wow.
So, Louise from Denmark, thank you. I don't know how to say that in Danish.
Yeah, well, yeah, thank you, Louise from Denmark. But also, did you say Bob from Narnia?
No, Sarnia.
Oh, okay. Oh. Wow. I'd say it's a bit weird if we were getting donations from Narnia.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. This show is pretty awesome.
We do spend a lot of time talking about fictional realms. So
that's true. That's
we right. might as well get something from Aslan. Or Mr. Tumnus, or...
Get in the car!
I just want to say, I've never really been a big fan of Narnia.
No?
Even before I picked up... I mean, I first read it when I was about 9 or 10 years old.
Right.
So I think a lot of the overtly Christian stuff went over my head, because I didn't have a Christian upbringing where that stuff would have been actively pointed out to me.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt... it was just like it existed on one or two levels. It felt really bland. And I was coming out of having just read Lord of the Rings, which I think is a much better written book.
Okay.
It's
a much differently written book. I'll go
it's a different.
Far.
You're not a fan of Lord of the Rings, Sam. I know
not,
that.
Yeah.
But I like it. I like the writing style. He's not really great at dialogue, Tolkien. There are some really good bits in it.
Yeah.
But it operates on many, many different levels. And though Tolkien pushes his Christianity a little bit into the story, he does it in a much more subtle way and does it in a much more interesting way than the just bash you over the head with Jesus stuff that Narnia does with C.S. Lewis.
Right.
I'll have to agree with you there. Narnia really kind of was like a long, winding path through a boring forest. You know, after you've been there a few times, you've already seen everything there is to see. And, you know, whereas there's a lot more action in Lord of the Rings, you've got wars, you've got a whole bunch of different races, you've got all sorts of stuff going on.
And less guilt-tripping, too.
Less guilt-tripping.
That was one of my big beefs, is the four initial, I think they're called the Pevensey children, that show up as the main characters in the first Narnia book.
Right.
They get brought back for the last book, which does this big revelation thing, and they learn that, oh, you're actually dead, and you died in a train accident. But, oh, hey, look.
Wait a second. I didn't know that.
You don't remember that? And their older sister...
I guess I didn't get all the way through the books.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to cry.
This is where it gets really awful. Their older sister, Susan, doesn't get to go to heaven with them because since she stopped believing in Narnia, she has discovered makeup and boys.
Oh.
So she is denied heaven.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was the first time I can imagine... That I can at least remember that I get really pissed off at a book that I read.
I didn't hear about that twist ending. I mean,
that's awful.
Contemporaries of C.S. Lewis and Tolkien, I mean, they were contemporaries and they talked to each other and stuff like that, I think. I don't know. But a contemporary with C.S. Lewis was Olaf Stapledon, which of that generation of authors is saying, like, you're a big fan of Manfred Mann. But, he wrote a book called Last and First Men, which if C.S. Lewis is too preachy and Christian, and Tolkien was sort of Christian, Olaf Stapledon was really good at the nihilism thing. I mean, it's Last and First Men. It's a story about the evolution and eventual destruction of the human race, and it's enormously written.
Yeah. It sounds a little bit Lovecraftian, actually, because Lovecraft has the sort of sense where there is no God in his universe, and actually it is very nihilistic.
There's actually no supernatural. It's one of the earlier hard science fictions. There's no mystical element to it at all.
The degree to which gods exist in Lovecraft is that they're basically ancient aliens that just trample over humans.
But they do exist, and I would challenge you that they are actually supernatural. They are transnatural understanding, therefore in fiction they would be, you know, supernatural. Blah.
That's why Lovecraft, I think, getting off of our topic here on Ask an Atheist, tends to kind of build my idea that, you know, there is this big kind of genre mush.
Yeah.
And that... In my opinion, I know you disagree with me a little bit on this, Sam, that sci-fi, horror, and fantasy tend to be different areas of the same genre.
Oh, you... Oh, don't.
And I think Lovecraft's the best example of it.
Ah.
Because it does elements of horror, it does elements of fantasy and sci-fi.
Not all of them well.
Yeah, there's a bit of overt racism that pops in there.
Yeah.
That pops into Lovecraft.
Deanna for the block.
I just want to see a literary cage match between the two of you guys, like throwing books at each other.
I think literary
awesome.
Might
greased
be...
Greased up with oil, too. the book's greased up, not you two.
Okay.
Yeah. Are we still talking about the same thing?
Ask an Atheist, sure. 253-584-1480. So, speaking of fictional cultures and fictional stuff, we have some interesting news this week. It's been just a weird, weird month for news in atheism. It's like, we want to do topics, but these great news stories keep popping up in our face. So we're going to talk about them some more this week. So.
Yeah, we went a little dark last week. There was a lot of child rape.
Oh, yeah, dude.
But this week is a bit more fun, a bit goofier, and a bit easier to laugh at because the bad guys here are easily defeatable.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So this is 1 million moms target DC Marvel Comics over gay storylines. 1 million moms, a conservative Christian organization, with only a couple of thousand members and a project of the Theocratic American Family Association, is angry at both Marvel and DC Comics for their positive inclusion of gay characters in their comic books. Marvel's Astonishing X-Men title recently celebrated the wedding of member Northstar to his longtime partner, and DC recently announced that a major iconic superhero would be reintroduced as gay in their recently relaunched line of comics. The AFA published an angry tirade on their website that accuses gay people of trying to indoctrinate impressionable young minds and brainwash them in thinking that a gay lifestyle choice is normal and desirable. They also remark that as Christians, we know that homosexuality is a sin, and they throw you a quote. It's what, Romans chapter 1, 26, 27. This isn't the first time that the AFA has gone crazy over a gay comic book character. Early in the year, they failed to get Toys R Us to pull an Archie comic book featuring the wedding of a gay character, Kevin Keller. Their actions backfired and the issue quickly sold out. About the same time, they also failed to convince JCPenney's to fire Ellen DeGeneres as its spokesperson.
Yeah, that's what these guys do.
Awesome. And they made Ellen actually a hero now, and JCPenney a hero for the gay community, because I'll tell you, people like me, I never cared at all about JCPenney. I'm like, well, I suppose if I'm nearby and I need socks, I'll drop in.
Right.
But now I'm like, I need some jeans. I think I'll go get some shirts. We will go and shop like crazy at JCPenney just because these bigoted 1 million moms are opposing them.
The backfire part is the part that I find particularly delicious. It reminds me a little bit of when Christian groups went after Harry Potter.
That's that, not a euphemism, you're just saying.
No, like okay. Literally went after these books because they found something that was more popular than them.
Right.
And I don't even think, I think that these guys are so used to seeing themselves as a majority that not even 20 years ago, just accusing somebody of being gay would be enough to destroy their reputation, get mm-hmm. them fired. That doesn't work anymore.
No, that's failed hard now. Those days are over. And it's, I love that they call themselves 1 million moms and it has 1,000 of members.
Yes. It's like one of the other pages on Facebook where you're like, I can find 1 million people who like Nickelback and you can't.
When did you turn into Nick?
I like prodding and making references and knowing he can't do anything about it.
Very good. So we should talk about Rush then.
Yeah. So that's what I find so funny is that our culture, we've hit this turning point. And these people, they don't want to admit it. All they're doing is making their historic reputation worse by the minute. That every second that goes by, every time they scream about how dare North Star be allowed to marry his partner, how dare DC release a gay superhero,
yeah.
More and more people are going to find the things that they say hateful and bigoted. Because our culture's changing. And it's changing really fast.
So do you think we've turned the corner on that now?
I think we've gotten pretty close to, if not already, on that like big long slide toward equal rights and respect for everybody. Because,
right.
you know, we've reached that point where it's something like more than 50% of people think it is okay to be gay in America. And more than 50% of people are willing to support some kind of equal rights. Maybe not marriage equality, but, you know, civil unions. So that's a huge step. And a lot of people are just kind of like, okay, if you're gay, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And people like 1 Million Moms and the American Family Association, all they can do is screech their lies on the way down.
And how are these people going to look in 10 years? I mean, they used to say things like 20 and 30 years. They look bad now, but
yeah.
I mean, you used to look at it, and people like George Wallace, people like Strom Thurmond,
mm-hmm.
when they ran for president, they would win states.
Yeah.
Strom Thurmond ran as a third-party candidate in 1948, and he won the entire little nub of like Mississippi, Louisiana, Georgia.
Nub.
It's that little chunk of the deep, deep South.
Yeah.
He won that as a third-party candidate. Nowadays, people when they brought up Strom Thurmond as a remember, it was like Trent Lott said,
yeah, Trent Lott. He's like trying to extol the virtues of Strom Thurmond's position in Congress, the stuff he did, the revolution of the Dixiecrats, and the and how it brought the GOP to where it is today, and blah 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 blah. Not realizing that outside of the circles there, that Strom Thurmond's mostly known for bad stuff, being kind of a racist. You know,
when he ran for president, he had one single plank in his platform, and he used to hit black people with it.
Right,
that was pretty much his whole plot.
Yeah,
the entire campaign was built around that one thing. So when you were in an organization like the AFA or 1 Million Moms, whose sole goal seems to be to scream about gay people, the gay people are bad, gay people are sinners, you should fire this person as being your spokesperson because they're gay.
Yeah.
And 20 years from now, they're already starting to feel it now that there was a huge backlash against the JCPenney thing. Not only did JCPenney immediately stand their ground, immediately defend Ellen DeGeneres,
yeah.
but I bet you that sales on JCPenney went up, just like that Kevin Keller Archie comic sold out right after they went angry about it, because all it did is point out to people that, hey, that business is on our side.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if I were to make a thing, is I don't know what Strom Thurmond did, but if he's primarily known for being afraid of fire, and I mean, his racism thing looks that outmoded to a lot of people now. It's like he's one with history, and that's what he's known for, is shouting from the mountaintops that fire is bad, stay away from fire. That's what people are going to talk about once you get out of his particular political circle. So,
yeah, and JCPenney actually just recently, their spring catalog, they've got a page with a couple of lesbian couples and their children modeling clothes in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think they may have actually, you know, thrown this in as a little extra screw you to the 1 million moms. They say, well, if you don't like us having Ellen DeGeneres, how would you like it if we show actual lesbian moms with their actual children wearing our clothes? Take that.
Very, very
There's
nice.
A bit of a canary in a coal mine that groups like 1 million moms have too, that they get angry and say, no, we're going to storm the castle. We hate this so much. And then nobody follows them.
Yeah.
It pretty much cements the fact that this stuff is not something that people are afraid of.
There's
anymore.
Something mentioned here that we're not talking about, and mad props to Archie. That was a surprise. Reading that, I was surprised.
Yeah, so. Archie has been an interesting comic book, the company, for the past few years.
I just said mad props.
Mad props.
I just said that.
And I didn't kill you.
Yeah.
Is it 1999?
I think so.
Okay. Awesome.
I think you're channeling.
I'm going to kill this by moving to an email. We have an email, Megan from Indiana. My coworkers bring out their Bibles and pray in the break room. When I talk to the manager about what he said they can read and what they want to talk about, and what they can read what they want and talk about what they want on their breaks, is this legal?
Yes, it actually is. Your boss is right about that. If they are intentionally trying to make you uncomfortable or ganging up on you off that sort of thing, it becomes an HR problem.
Yeah.
But if they're simply meeting amongst themselves quietly off the sales floor, then it really isn't much of an issue.
Right.
The same way that you would be allowed to talk with another coworker off in the corner, not on the sales floor, not on your break, about atheism or about anything. It's also a private business, so if a business even wants to allow that on the sales floor, it may be legal as well. Like, what if it's a Christian bookstore? It only becomes an issue of legal, illegal, if we're talking about the government. That if you guys are, like, school teachers, or you work at the DMV, and you're bringing that stuff onto the sales floor, that becomes an issue.
You're not 100% there. There's actually the issue of harassment.
Yes, the issue of harassment. You cross that line. If they are harassing you, yes, go to your boss. It becomes an issue.
Right.
But if they're just discussing it, having a little Bible book club, they're free to do that.
Exactly. You know, if it's in a school, if it's in a government office, of course, you know, and they're on their break, they can still do that. But you can't be harassing people, and you can't be, you know, using your position to endorse government endorsement of religion.
Freedom of and from religion is freedom of and from religion everywhere. It's supposed to apply equally. They're allowed to talk about their religion. You're allowed to talk about your not religion. As long as there's no coercion, as long as there's no harassment, it is legal and it is allowed. So, I understand what it's like for some people when they get out of religion to be faced with it, but other people are allowed too. So this is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to keep talking about the great news and emails we've been getting lately.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
Prevent damage to your home and furnishings, save money, and avoid potential health problems by controlling moisture and eliminating mold growth. Madrona Home Services helps homeowners in the Seattle and Tacoma areas protect their investments. Madrona Home Services will clean building exteriors, walkways, and gutters to remove damaging moss, algae, lichens, and fungus through low-pressure power washing. We'll restore the natural oils in your cedar shake roof and cure your slippery deck. Contact us at MadronaHomeServices.com. That's MadronaHomeServices.com.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you, and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
No human is burned with original sin, nor condemned to live in guilt, nor in need of salvation from the supernatural. I'm Eileen, Vice President of Humanists of Washington, a nonprofit organization dedicated to advancement through reason, science, and democracy. Our organization opposes the use of dogma in determining laws and strongly supports marriage equality in Washington. A full range of civil rights is necessary to achieve full personal empowerment in society. Get involved at humanistsofwashington.org.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And we've got a fun one. So, Bigfoot.
Yay!
Yeah, Bigfoot. So, Bigfoot hair samples are wanted for a study by researchers at Oxford University and the Lausanne Museum of Zoology. They put an open call for it. They claim that a new method of analyzing DNA may be the key to seeing if there's any evidence to prove the existence of the mythical ape creature. They've already received a number of donations of hair, blood, and items that are said to have been chewed on by Bigfoot. Brian Sykes of Oxford says that they're going to primarily focus on doing DNA analysis on the hair they've received to ascertain its species of origin. Sykes said that the odds of discovering Bigfoot from this endeavor are, well, slim, but if we don't look, we'll never find out.
Well, you know, he's right there, but boy, the odds of finding anything are so tiny. As an aside, I just have to reminisce. A few years ago, when I very first got involved in the skeptics movement, do you guys remember those dudes in Tennessee with the styrofoam cooler?
And the Bigfoot sickle?
Yeah, they said they had the body of Bigfoot. Yeah. And it was on CNN, and I'm sitting there ranting, going, I can't believe they even put this on TV. I mean, these guys are idiots, obviously. So then they say, okay, well, we're going to let a scientist examine this sample. And it turns out it's one of the dude's cousin who's got like a lab coat he bought at a garage sale. And, well, it looks like something I've never seen before.
Oh. And then, I believe him.
Yeah, I believe him, too. Turns out it was a monkey costume and a bunch of raccoon guts. And all I can think is, you know, if I were CNN, I would want those samples first, test them first, and then put them up. So I think Oxford's got the right idea here. Let's get all the best samples.
If you're going to research Bigfoot, if you're going to go that route, yeah, this is the way to do it. Hair samples, have chewed and bloody things sent to you in the email. Most people call the cops when that happens.
Yeah. Didn't this guy send that stuff to Jody Foster before he shot Reagan?
Yeah.
That's a little creepy. Now you're asking for it.
That's weird.
The stuff you were going to get in the mail.
Here's an orange frisbee. I think Bigfoot chewed on it.
It's funny because a lot of people will think we'd be mean when we bring up things like Bigfoot as an example. That's not fair. I believe in Jesus, and Jesus says all this stuff, and nobody believes in Bigfoot. I beg to differ.
Okay.
I've known people that believe in Bigfoot. I've lost friendships over Bigfoot. I've never lost a friend over Jesus. I have lost friendships over Bigfoot.
You're kidding.
I really wish I was, but actually, no, I'm not. I'm not sad about that because it gives me this story.
Okay, go for it.
The thing was, is I had a friend that I'd worked with on political campaigns in the past, and he believed everything. Mm. That to him, the universe looked like an episode of Doctor Who. You got alien abductions, you got demonic possessions, you got gods, you got ghosts, you got monsters. The only thing he didn't believe in was 9/11 conspiracies. That was the only thing, and I have no idea how that one got under the radar.
Very specific at the weirdness buffet.
Yeah, he has a line, and I guess that was just on the other side of it.
Okay.
So every time I'd get into any sort of discussion, he was a friend of mine on Facebook, I would post anything skeptical, anything about atheism. He would just jump on that. And it just got old after a while because it was immediately hostile, it was immediately nasty. And every discussion we had, it doesn't matter if we started on homeopathy, it doesn't matter if we started on Jesus, it would end in one place every single time.
People like to fight, man. And just, you know.
But it always went to Bigfoot.
Yeah.
He was so hardcore about Bigfoot. He even wanted me to go on a Bigfoot hunting expedition. And I gave
him... I would totally go to that!
Is that like snipe hunting?
Yes!
It's exactly like snipe hunting. I gave him two things that he would have to give me. The two prerequisites that would make me not feel like an idiot.
Okay.
Prerequisite the first. We would need to bring along a reputable primatologist or anthropologist.
Okay.
Here's the reason. In the event I'm wrong and we do find this thing, I am not going to be that guy.
Oh, you're not going to be Zapruder here?
Yeah, I'm not going to be, hey, I saw it. He was really huge. And I'll be that guy on CNN. I am not going to be that guy because I will be that guy for the rest of my life.
Sure.
And in the event we find something, I want somebody who actually is qualified to study this thing.
You want documentable evidence.
Exactly.
And then point two?
Point two. I want some piece of physical evidence that says we're looking in this reason, this area that we're going to be searching for a reason. Mm-hmm. That if somebody goes looking for the bones of like a Neanderthal, it's because they found some piece of physical evidence that said, hey, there might be more here.
Yeah.
I want that. This is way lower bar than any university would ever ask to search something out. Way lower. He thought this was unreasonable, and it just devolved from there. This is the same guy who, by the way, had an argument for the divinity of Jesus that involved the testimony of an alien abductee who said he got sucked up into a flying saucer, and so these just aliens just started talking to him about Jesus.
Was your friend a French race car driver?
No, unfortunately.
Okay.
He wasn't that guy.
Okay.
But he probably believes most of the same things.
I will say that these people who believe in, crypto-fascists? No, crypto-zoologists.
The study of animals that can't be studied.
Yeah. yes. If they ever wanted, they really have no cause to say that nobody takes them seriously now when you've got researchers at Oxford and, you know, primatology, you know, and I feel really sorry for these folks at Oxford because their mail is about to get really, really smelly.
Oh, my God. It's all like drool and fur and poop samples and shards of pottery.
I might be Bigfoot. Here's my urine sample. I mean, that's where this goes.
I'd say to the skeptics out there, not to waste these guys' time. It's not the same thing as selling fake stuff to the cryptozoologists, the kooks, the crazies. These guys are actual scientists.
Yeah.
And they're going to come back with the same thing SETI says, which didn't find anything.
Yeah.
But what's so fun about these people, the true believer types, is how easy it is to hoax them. That they'll come down and say, oh, there is no way this is a hoax. There is no way this is a hoax. Then the guy with, like, the balloon and the streetlight that blinks comes back and goes, oh, look what I did.
Ah, Bigfoot. So
big clay feet attached to your shoes, walk around in the mud. Yeah.
They should know at least to put an arc in that footprint.
Hey, crop circles. We've got an email. Well, another email. This is Sid from Oakland, and I think this will be a fun one. If you had to pick an afterlife or make up one that would happen when you die, what would you pick? I think we're all waiting for Mike, so...
Flying spaghetti monsters afterlife, hands down.
What is it?
Beer volcano, stripper factory.
How is that distinct from Valhalla?
Well,
Less fighting?
I guess Valhalla would be cool, too, but I really want that beer volcano.
Okay.
Yeah.
Beer volcano. Man, okay. I had no idea.
I am actually
surprised. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm too much of a coward to make it to Valhalla. I'd probably run screaming. I believe the prerequisites is you have to die in honorable battle with a weapon in your hand.
Right.
I'm not good at either of these things.
Yeah, me neither.
I guess the afterlife I would choose. Have you guys ever seen the Albert Brooks movie Defending Your Life?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
That would be the afterlife I chose. If you're not familiar with the movie, go out and rent it. It's really good. It's about a guy who is kind of neurotic. Played by Albert Brooks, oddly enough.
Yeah.
Who is in a car accident, he dies, he wakes up, and he is actually put on trial in the afterlife for the instances in which he did, or in this case, didn't overcome fear.
Yeah. Is Rip Torn's his defender, right?
Rip Torn is sort of his rep that he comes and talks to, and everyone in the afterlife is super smart, and they've moved on to a higher level. And you have to prove that you've been able to overcome fear. And Albert Brooks at one point goes into this little room where you look at all your past lives, and in every single one of them, he's running away from something. And even in one case, he's like an African villager running from a tiger.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's his whole life for eternity. He's always that guy.
All right. Yep. I got to say, in my case, depending on what you mean by weapon, I think the chances of me getting into Valhalla are good, because my weapon of choice for most of my life has been the keyboard. And the chances of me being in front of the keyboard going, oh, crap, and then just keeling over are pretty high. So I think my chances of hanging out in a mead hall, I'll just say, you know, my afterlife would be not too distinct from my life.
Your battle with a keyboard, is that kind of like it sounds very Devo.
I've got some of those old IBM Type M keyboards that look like they were just, somebody took a Ford engine and made a keyboard out of it.
Oh, yeah, those things are burly.
Yeah, I'd kill a person with that if I was so inclined, which I'm not. Ask an atheist 253-584-1480. But
at least it's not a keytar.
Oh.
No, actually, no. I take it back. That would be better. A keytar battle.
Yeah, getting
you're like a Silverhawks character.
Yeah, getting into Valhalla on the basis of a keytar. That you get a statue, I should hope.
You draw a line and you cross it, Odin.
Yeah.
In the event of a zombie apocalypse, anything is a good bashing instrument. I mean, really.
I think we're going to keep on the email roll here because we've got some really good ones this week.
Excellent.
And this one comes to us from Joe from Utah. I'm going to read this one, but I just want to get the first thing out right away. All right. This is the best proof for God. Just look. Point the first. The first law of thermodynamics, if thermodynamics is matter and energy cannot come from nothing. Point two, conservation of mass says that matter cannot be created or destroyed. Point three, matter exists. Point four, given the laws, matter cannot come from nothing and it can't be created, therefore the cause of matter is supernatural. Point five, this would have to be some sort of creator. How would you answer? Point one, thermodynamics does not mean what you think it means. Everybody seems to think they're talking about the Earth, like the Earth is some sort of like weirdo closed system that no energy ever leaves or escapes, and therefore can't be matter or life. Not true. In this case, all the energy that created, you know, matter and energy are kind of the same thing in physics. It was all here to begin with. So
yeah, and the thing he's talking about, the law of conservation of energy. That's part of the first law of thermodynamics, and I'm not a scientist.
No.
I just did a quick search online before coming in.
Oh, fair enough.
Which is clearly how he did his arguments as well. His first one being the law of conservation of energy. Mm-hmm. Matter cannot be created or destroyed, but it can only be changed. That kind of throws out the whole God thing. So it's like, well, I can understand it, therefore supernatural. It doesn't say something can't come from nothing. That's the part where he shows his hand.
Right.
The first law of thermodynamics does not say something can't come from nothing. That's right. That's clearly from like a Ken Ham website or something.
Right.
Again,
yeah, it's interesting derivation because it comes from Answers in Genesis. It comes from Ken Ham. And I think it's something that a creationist said or a scientist said to him a billion years ago, like a long time ago. Somebody said it to him, and it just stuck in his craw. He's like, some scientist told this to me to make me wrong, so I'm going to keep stabbing creationists with it until they understand that I'm not wrong.
That's the weird thing about the attitudes about a lot of this creationists out there, is that when you really get down to it, they believe that science is a conspiracy theory.
Right.
That the majority of these people are actually lying to you and trying to create something and build this for what purpose? It's not like they're all getting rich off of the overwhelming evidence that comes to us from geology and biology and astronomy and all of these things that sort of buttress each other and help create. They all lean on each other and all add to each other's evidence. And it just seems kind of like, what has he got? He's a talking snake in a tree. And that Ken Ham, who, I mean, not to go
Ken Ham is a talking snake in a tree?
No, what? Not to get all ad hominem, because he is a liar, and there's ways to bring that up. I mean, he's got nothing. But he kind of looks like one of those transitional stages when somebody's turning into a werewolf in a movie.
Ooh, you're right. That's kind of the scraggly beard.
Yeah. It's the worst beard ever. You just give it up, dude.
Yeah. Now, I've got a way, actually, for all of this to be true, if it were true, and we know that number one is not really what he's saying it is.
Right.
But a way for this to be true, and it's still not a god, is the recently some scientific article was talking about how some people think that a black hole contains the universe, and then all universes are inside of black holes, or maybe we're in a black hole and that black hole is in a universe that's in a black hole.
It's an entire cosmology based off of something I think Stephen Hawking said at a bar once.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, if that were true, then maybe the universe is always existing, or it pops into existence. It goes through the black hole from another universe. And there you go.
Oh, you're taking this in a direction I didn't anticipate. I like this. Yeah.
So, you know, I am no scientist, just to preface this, but that makes it possible for a universe to pop into existence and not violate the laws of thermodynamics.
I am not a scientist. I am a meat popsicle. But
I'm not a scientist either, but they throw out this claim a lot, this idea that something came from nothing and that's what we're saying.
Right.
I don't think anyone's making that claim. I've never seen that. I mean, the Big Bang isn't everything just popped out of
nothing. There is that Lawrence crosstalk, which I was going to talk about, which specifically deals with this something comes from nothing phenomenon that's hit the creationists lately. And there's this whole, your step between 3 and 4 is not a big step. Your step between 4 and 5 is enormous. This is God of the gaps right here, where given the laws of matter come from nothing and can't be created, therefore the cause of matter is supernatural. And then he immediately goes to, therefore Jesus.
Yeah.
Or therefore God. It's like, well, there's a lot of assumptions you're making here that we don't follow. So even if every point in what Joe from Utah is saying here is correct, that's not enough to convince me of anything, because you're not showing your work. There's a lot more steps in the way that you have to show me in order for me to buy this. And it's just not happening.
Number 5, that's the problem point right there.
Right.
This would have to be some creator. No, it wouldn't, actually.
It could be aliens from a different universe. It could be turtles all the way down.
Could there be an atom bomb that exploded on another Earth in another universe.
All of these things require more work than is being shown in this crummy five-point thing. And this is why it doesn't appeal to atheists. Or at least this is why I think it doesn't appeal to atheists.
It doesn't have any explanatory power either.
It explains nothing. And right. it's not that he's... I would believe him, and I would really respect what he's having to say a lot more if there was any question in there. If it was like, four, blah, 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 five, I don't quite understand, but it seems to indicate a creator. Is if there was any doubt, if he was showing us any doubt at all, I'd be more willing to have some sort of conversation with him to see where he was going with it. But this is, no, it's, in these cases, it's usually matter has to come from somewhere, therefore, zombie son of God.
Right, yeah. And there's never any, you know, more intermediate steps in these. It's something somebody put up on the internet and a bunch of people copy and paste it. They go, wow, that does sound really deep. Okay, cool, I'm going to throw this out at all the atheists.
Yeah.
And it, not only does it not have that, I have a big issue with four on there, too, that say that it must be supernatural. One, I don't think anyone's making the claim that something came from nothing.
Right.
The Big Bang isn't, boop, everything exists. That's actually creationism, something from nothing. But in the case of this, it's everything was condensed in a big, big ball that got really, really hot and really, really dense, and then everything exploded over everywhere.
I would say he's misnumbering here, in that the cause of matter is supernatural is really part of point five and not part of point four. Yeah. He's misnumbering in order to give the impression that number four is well known. Given the laws, matter cannot come from nothing, and then, comma, and it can't be created, therefore the cause of matter is supernatural. It's like if I wrote... if we wrote a rule that said no right-hand turns, but also Superman. You know, right. It's like clearly part of that was just tacked on at the end.
Right.
So we have another email, sort of related.
Yes.
And this comes, I think we've spoken with this entity before. Shrek from Your Mind. That sounds familiar, doesn't
it? That's a great
name. Sounds
like
a prog rock band.
Yeah, I think it is, actually. Louis Pasteur found out that life can only come from non-life. This is something comes from nothing all over again, just with different words. Evolution directly contradicts that. Why are you sticking to a scientifically absurd theory that defies not only the laws of thermodynamics, but Pasteur? First one, evolution says nothing about a biogenesis. Done.
Yes.
Second one, I would say that, one, he's making an appeal to authority, saying Pasteur said this, therefore it must be true. But also, Pasteur didn't say that. Pasteur actually said the opposite of that. We're talking about that closed system idea, which, again, is the big problem with these thermodynamic arguments, that nothing really exists in a closed system in that way, only in a lab. If we're talking about where's this source of energy coming from, go outside, look up in the sky. That big yellow thing that hurts your eyes when you look at it, that is pumping energy at us.
The one that the TV shows don't come from? The other light?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
And the other really big one is that he makes the claim that only life can come from non-life.
Right.
My parents would beg to differ.
Really?
Yes, I actually came a lot through life coming from more life.
Oh, okay.
And I wasn't there for this, but I'm going to guess that their parents did the same thing that my parents did.
There's an argument here, which is when people say life can only come from life, non-life cannot be part of the life process, then that would suggest there's only a limited amount of material out there for living things, when non-living material is being constantly brought into the cycle of life. So it's a weird concept.
You know, really, if you want to take it down to its most basic thing, what these people are saying, what the creationists are trying to convince us all of, is that life cannot possibly be spontaneously created by natural processes. They're saying that it has to be a god, because otherwise we'd have just a big dead rock in space. But, you know, just up here in the University of Washington in Seattle, they have done some experiments where they can get, they got their substances together, and they actually created amino acids that are the building blocks of life. They created them out of dead nothing.
Yeah, they did.
Yep.
Man. So, Truck, you know, we've done one of these. We've talked about next time. If you want to call one of the most best proven theories in science scientifically absurd, do it to my face. This is the last email I'm doing from you. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to take another break. Be back in a moment.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communications succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences, and more. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's number one source of atheist videos.
Looking to sell or buy a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, and surrounding areas? Plant your roots and invest in this entrepreneur-friendly area with world-class education and healthcare. Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 and let him work with you to achieve your goals, save your time, and protect your investment. Contact Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at dndrealty.ca. It's time you hired a professional.
Doyle's Public House is Tacoma's number one spot for the best selection of import brews and Irish whiskey.
Football matches and Red Sox games, knowledge night and no-cover live music.
Doyle's is your spot.
Check us out at doylespublichouse.com or stop by for a proper libation and soda bread at 2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Like us on Facebook for all the latest updates and specials.
Doyle's in Tacoma.
2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. doylespublichouse.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We've got a phone call from Manhattan, Kansas. I lost the paper with a name on it. But you want to talk about artificial intelligence, right? Can I get your name?
Yeah, my name is Tony Smith.
Oh, hey, Tony. All right, so artificial intelligence. What do you want to talk about?
Oh, well, basically the idea that since, you know, we're getting closer and closer to developing something of the nature of true artificial intelligence, maybe, like, one day when we do develop it, I wonder, I was kind of curious about what you guys think about what that will have on the recovery, what that effect that will have on the, like, the religious community when it comes to the idea of dualism, you know, the mind existing outside of the body, and, you know, maybe if it'll lead more credence to the idea that minds have to exist within a physical container such as the brain or, you know, hardware from a computer.
Right, yeah, I'm a strict materialist, though, as my friend Ron John says, mind is what brain does. And I do think a bit about artificial intelligence. It was one of the things that really caught my interest as a kid and in science fiction, and I've sort of kept up with it. I think, ultimately, artificial intelligence will have the effect that we're all expecting, that the idea that we can now create a mind independently of that ordained by God will have a negative effect on the way religion works. I don't think it'll kill religion. I think they'll do what they usually do, is first they'll vilify it, then they'll start benefiting from it, and then they'll try to work it into their mythology. But I think it's going to prove that you don't, it's going to say a lot of really bad things about soul, really.
I think, right, the soul is probably where I wanted to go with it.
Yeah.
I would say that we would have a discussion again about what a person is.
Yeah.
That we would eventually come up with a robot or an android or whatever you want to call it, an artificial intelligence that is so advanced that you can interact with it and it would be indistinguishable from a human being. And at that point, we're going to have a very heavy, very very complicated discussion about what human rights are and who we're going to give those to and where does the line go. It's going to become a very weird gradient.
The definition of personhood.
Yeah.
I've always loved the idea that you could create an artificial intelligence that then could be aware of itself and be an actual personality. And when you do consider it a person, as a kid myself, I was kind of dorky and I read a lot of books, and I always thought, boy, wouldn't it be awesome if I could have a little friend that lived in my computer and we could be, you know, interact just like people did. And
would you like to play a game?
Oh, no. Something better than that, though. I've always been crappy at chess.
I think there's going to be a discussion about rights. And I think, but the thing is we don't know. We don't know what this stuff is what artificial intelligence is going to look like. I mean, they say that artificial intelligence is right around the corner, but fusion power is 50 years from now. For the last 70 years, always new things always seem to get thrown in the way. Right now, it's really there's just physical limitations in the way we create sort of these processing technologies, and we're starting to get around that, and then things might start moving again. But I think there's going to be some challenges about personhood and about what rights mean when we have artificial intelligence. And the thing that I like to tell my friends is don't be prepared for it to go the way you expect. Artificial intelligence, if it's really going to be different from us, it might have some very different ideas about what constitutes rights. And what we should do, if I can get my science fiction hat on it, and this is what I wrote about when I pretended to be a writer, is, you know, we need to ask the artificial intelligence what it wants for rights, not just assume it wants the same things that we want.
Domination. Yeah. Kill all humans.
What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think maybe in some aspects this is a very deep question. Like, even without the religious issues, and you add that in, that just tacks some more complications for those who believe that. I just wonder if maybe some people who are religious, I mean, I just was talking to Matt and Jeff D. on the Atheist Experience about it, and they said something similar I've been thinking about. Sorry, I plugged them.
So. Oh, no. They're friends. It's cool.
We love them.
Yeah. Your competition. they were saying something I've been thinking about, which is that maybe they'll try to spin this as, oh, it's created, so that means minds must be created. But then they never get outside of the aspect of that mind has to exist within that hardware, and that there's no out. Like, what happens when a AI dies? You know, where does it go?
That's what I mean about incorporation into their mythology, is a look for ways to stick. I mean, it's another God of the Gaps, is because now they have this new information about how mind is, and we're having a look at the universe. We have, this is sort of an ultimate proof of a materialist universe in a way, as if we can make a person without having to go through the process that we're told we have to go through.
And
so they're going to look for places to stick it.
And if it's indistinguishable from a person, the idea that somebody can't have emotions and feelings of beauty and be able to interact with you in the same way without a soul.
Yeah.
Suddenly falls out the window. It's, again, getting back to that question, do you need this sort of divine spark to make a person?
Right.
And if you can make a person artificially, clearly the answer to that is no. But would they say, oh, once it becomes a certain amount of, you know, certain amount of complication to this machine, God gives it a soul like Pinocchio or something?
Well,
you know, I heard an interesting question about that as far as twins go. Somebody was mentioning that, you know, twins start out in the womb as a single egg that divides.
Yeah.
So that single egg, if life begins at conception, God gives it a soul, right?
Right.
So if it divides, do you have two separate souls, or do you have that one soul and each one only has half a soul? And boy, that's really dehumanizing.
Don't they say the same thing about redheads?
Well, oh, come on now.
Redheads have no soul.
Yeah.
The same thing of a chimera, two different embryos that actually merge together and form one, that one actually resorbs the other one. Does that person now have two souls?
No, that's interesting. Oh.
Better than one, man.
So, I mean, I don't know if the day is coming, but if it is, I hope I'm around to see artificial intelligence. What do you think, Tony?
I hope it'll be something. It was something to really redefine who we are and our place, and kind of figure out how exact a better way to learn about how our own minds work in the physical process, and how to maybe figure out how to fix some of the issues like psychosis, different psychoses. And as far as the whole thing with the two souls, what about split brain patients? You know, the one that's an atheist,
right?
The half of the brain that's an atheist and half of the brain that's a theist. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Is the soul split? What's going on?
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Tony. And that's really what it comes down to, is the effects that this will have on psychology is enormous. For one thing, if we can emulate a brain, there's things we can learn that we might not be able to otherwise do if we can do sort of non-destructive testing that we weren't able to do before. The other thing is it will give us that outside context that we don't have. we really don't know what humanity looks like from the outside. None of us are outside of the issue. So there's things that, like when I moved away from Phoenix, there was a lot of craziness about Phoenix that I couldn't see until I got away from it. And I'm looking forward to see what we learn about ourselves when there's somebody who sits outside of what we're doing and says, you guys are kind of nuts.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it gets down to all these stories we have. We build ourselves up on this pedestal, whether it's Pinocchio or Data from Star Trek, that they all want to be human. What if they look at us and go, eh, not so much?
Right.
That's really gross. Messy to be human. I mean, really, you know, even if you do kind of take the tack that we are kind of just our electrical impulses, we are the function of our brains, right. You know, our mind, if you want to call it that, is that, I mean, you can do it a lot better, a lot more efficiently with electronic gear, with computers, with, you know, hard drives.
Well, I'm looking forward to the evidence.
Me too, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
I think it's likely that artificial intelligence is possible, but we don't have the evidence of it. I do have to be a skeptic, so.
Mm-hmm. Clearly, I've played some multiplayer games, and it's not very advanced
yet. No. So, speaking of skepticism, we have one more news story. We have a psychic shop owner who tells everyone the previous psychic occupant was a fraud. I love this. Last Saturday in Fort Lauderdale, a banner appeared near the front door of a self-described psychic storefront. Attention! Persons who have given this psychic money before March 2012, you have been defrauded. Would you like your money back? It then listed a phone number. The man who operates the business, Dewey Evans, purchased the business from its previous occupant, who also ran a psychic business, for $10,000. The previous owner, Psychic Ava, didn't tell Evans that the building was late on 3 months' rent worth of rent and that the building was in foreclosure. So Evans is telling the world that Psychic Ava is a fraud. If they ripped off us, I'm sure they ripped off other people, Evans said. He's decided to hang up the banner rather than pursue a civil lawsuit. And there's a good reason for that.
Glasshouse, meet Stone. Stone, Glasshouse.
Yeah.
What I find kind of funny about this is that these psychic types, they usually give people information about three things. One is finances,
yep.
Business decisions, and relationships.
Yeah. Love.
Love, doctor. So in this case, two of the three, he totally dropped the ball on for himself.
I would argue actually three, because, you know, the relationship between the previous owner and the new owner, that's a relationship, even though it's not love.
It may not be a love relationship.
Yeah, but he couldn't see that fraud coming?
Yeah, it's like I just imagine somebody coming into his business after finding out about this in the newspaper and going, I was going to ask you whether I should take this new job or not, but I think I'm going to go somewhere else.
And it's kind of amusing that he's deciding to put a sign out rather than pursue a civil lawsuit, because he's going to be, it's a psychic suing a psychic for fraud. That asks a very interesting question about psychics, doesn't it now?
About this psychic, certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of interesting because the last thing you want to do, and this is getting to shows like Coast to Coast, how everyone throws out their own personal crazy, but no one points fingers and laughs at other people's crazy, is that pretty much everyone's going to walk away with a black eye in that discussion. And if you take this into a court of law and this guy with fake magical power says, that magical man is fake, then the only thing that can happen is the other magical man is going to retaliate and both of them look stupid.
My sort of mean guy fantasy for this one is to rent space next to the psychic and put a sign that says, no, this guy is a fraud too, Arrow. You know, I mean,
that would be perfect. And, you know, there actually have been discussions in recent years about whether towns can regulate psychics, you know, because, you know, they want to have a license or something or a bond so that people have some kind of recourse when they go to a psychic and they feel like they haven't been treated fairly, like they haven't gotten an authentic reading. Of course, the problem is, how do you know?
What does an authentic psychic reading look like?
It looks exactly like what an inauthentic psychic looks like, unfortunately.
Is there a margin? Like, are you supposed to lose 10% of the mass of your wallet? Is that how this works?
At least.
Yeah, that's what I'd think. Wasn't there actually a civil government somewhere that was trying to set up a union of psychics or some sort of psychic...
What, like the X-Men?
Justice League or something? Yeah, something like that.
Oh,
yeah,
that would be awesome.
I said Justice League. Yeah, I did.
We've been hanging out with Mike too much.
Yeah, I know.
I'd honestly be fine with this. And I know this is a place where we disagree, Sam. I'd be happy if the government said, okay, these are the criteria you have to meet to call yourself a psychic legally.
Right.
That you protect the term. And then nobody will ever probably hit that thing. But in the event that somebody really does have powers, they could cross that hurdle.
I think James Randi is enough for that. We do disagree on this because I feel like if we created the Office of Psychic Powers, that would be lending credence to the unproven idea of psychic powers. And
right.
Government regulation, I don't know if you've been watching the news, government regulation is pretty malleable. So at some, you know, you could start with a really high level of what a psychic is, and then through legislation, whittle it down to can you move a spoon with your mind and a finger? Now you're a psychic.
I see, or you have a turban.
Or can you pay a $35 licensing fee?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
you know, if you want a really good example of that kind of regulation lending things credence, there's always the NCAM.
That's true. Oh, you know what I'm thinking of? It wasn't a psychic union. It was that Denver, Colorado alien embassy is
yes,
what I was thinking.
Yes. Oh, that was where the city of Denver passed an initiative, a ballot measure, to create basically the X-Files.
Yeah.
So,
oh, you're getting too close, Mulder.
But it was local government X-Files. So take everything you love about cable access and everything you love about the X-Files and everything you love about the Public Works Department, combine it, and you have the Denver Embassy of Alien Epistemology. I don't know.
And it's kind of like the Visitors Bureau for the visitors.
Wah, wah, wah. I just remember that, like, wow, yeah, that was pretty crazy. Did that pass? Because I remember it totally.
I think they funded it too, like, you know, $10,000 or something ridiculous.
We need to go.
I can just say, if I'm sitting on the city council of Denver and it's time to start taking out the scalpel to the budget, sorry, Mulder.
Yeah. Go into business.
Of course, that means I'm just part of the evil conspiracy. Yeah. Then
go into a business and put a sign out front that says that the civil government defrauded you in lieu of a court case.
So. You're trying to suppress the truth, Mike.
I'm always trying to suppress the truth. We know everything about the aliens and Jesus and all that stuff, but we're just trying to lie.
Yeah. Well, how many times do you hear that a week, though?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah, I hear that constantly.
Anytime you have something that's not proven, that you have actually no evidence for at all you have to do is just claim that it's being suppressed. I mean, go to whale.to and you'll see, you know, everybody's being suppressed. The evidence is there, you just can't find it.
What, you don't have proof that the president is secretly a shape-shifting lizard? That means they're covering it up. That's just the proof right there.
Yeah, my personal favorite is Al Gore as a robot that I surreptitiously designed sometime in the future.
Did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. But can I help you build it when it's time?
I don't know.
I could solder. I have twist ties.
Oh, you can solder. Oh, man. I used to, but I shake too much now. So.
I would just be cautioning you about creating artificial life, Sam. My nerd may be showing a little bit, but I'd say one word and people will get it.
What's that?
Albeit small of you, Ultron.
And on that note...
That story ended badly.
Yeah, that's true. We've got... do we have a date for the Secular Coalition for America yet? Is that
no, nothing's been bent down. I haven't heard anything back from them, but we would love to have their new executive director, Edwina Rogers, on to have a discussion about things that she said in past interviews.
Okay.
Interviews, the invite's still open.
All right. So this is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam. With me was Deanna, Joy Lyons, and Mike Gillis. Music, as usual, is by Chris Coleman. Production assistants, Rebecca Freeman, Darren Garvin, Rich Lyons, and Andrea Caparin. Post show is at Doyle's in an hour. Ask an Atheist is an NEDM media production. Give us an email at questions@askanatheisttv or call us at 206-420-0997. See you next week.
Come laugh with me.
Oh, that
Clay Radio, your conversation station. KLAY Lakewood, Tacoma on 1180.